Good evening. It is Wednesday, May 5th, 2021. Happy Cinco de Mayo. I'm James Brierton. Welcome to this live open mic night here on the Carolina Weather Group. We've got a very full panel for you tonight. There is our group, including guest Brad Panovich of WCNC Charlotte, recently voted number one Twitter feed in Charlotte, if I'm not mistaken. I made a promise that I'd get that in. Right off the top, there it is. We want to invite all of you at home, on your phone, on your couch, on the toilet, wherever it is you might be watching, to comment right now live with us so we can put your comments on the screen, because this is as much of your conversation as it is ours. And we have some really fun tools here tonight that we're using where we're going to be able to put some of your comments on the screen if you comment live. So you got to comment live so we can put them on the screen. If you're listening and it's not May 5th, then obviously this is a replay, but we're still happy you're here nonetheless on our podcast feed, on the Carolina WeatherNet, and all those platforms. So let's get right on into this, and let's talk about the week that we had with three straight days of being in some sort of SPC outlook. I think we cut a break today, but Brad, let me start with you, because you were on the air covering these for WCNC. It was about 12:40 on Monday when we were in a Zoom meeting talking about that day's evening news, and everyone just went running because of the tornado warning.
Yeah, it was kind of a crazy morning. We actually, even early in the morning, I'm one of those people, as a weather geek, I got up in the middle of the night, and I check my phone, not see what time it is, but to check Radarscope real quickly, see what's going on out there. And I even noticed early, like 2, 3, 4 in the morning, we had some cells that were trying to move north ahead of the warm front. And some of them had some mid-level rotation. So right away, I knew, this is going to be a long day. And I had seen the SPC outlook already start to see us upgraded to a slight risk for most of the Western Carolinas. And so I knew it was going to be a long day, but it looked like there was going to be a lull in the morning to about midday, and then we're going to see some afternoon storms develop. And so right around lunchtime, I was getting ready to come in early. And as I'm getting ready, that line was coming in from the west, and I was looking at the radar, and we had a storm that was rapidly developing in supercell characteristics and pretty much spun up a tornado real quickly. And I say a tornado real quickly because at the time there was an indication of what we call a TDS, which is a tornado debris signature. The correlation coefficient, which is a product of the radar, actually briefly looked like it showed lofted debris on the radar, which is the radar actually hitting stuff that's being lofted from the ground, either leaves, trees, 2x4 shingles, what have you. And then that storm continued to track northeast, producing tornado warnings in Gaston County, Mecklenburg County. There was no warnings for Stanley County, but we did have a tornado touchdown there. And then more warnings over towards Moore County and then into the Sandhills. But what was interesting was the first reports of damage we got were out of Stanley County, where there was no warning. And so started investigating that a little bit as the afternoon wore on. And it looked like tornado damage. I could just tell looking at some of the pictures. So that was kind of interesting. But we did not hear a word of any other damage in Gaston, Mecklenburg, York. Even the Weather Service didn't put out any LSRs or anything until about 9:51 p.m. at night. I'm sitting here getting ready for the 11 o'clock news, and I get this private message from a viewer. And it's a full-fledged still of a tornado with lofted debris. And immediately I'm like trying to type as fast and jump out of my seat. I'm like, where was this? And I'm thinking right away, okay, is this some fake picture someone sent me? The next thing I get from this person, Robbie, his name, sends me a picture of his farm basically destroyed. So you're looking at some of the footage. This is his turkey farm. And I said, where is this? And he says, I'm west of Clover in York County. So I'm like, uh-oh. I'm like, that's exactly where that tornado warning was earlier in the day. So I pull up the radar data, and sure enough, that debris signature, I went back and looked at the archive data right where his farm is. In fact, he didn't even give me the address. I found his farm on Google Maps, and then he sends me the address and confirmed exactly the farm I was looking at. And I was just stunned. So I private messaged the weather service, and I started tweeting it, and they were like, what time was this? Where'd you get that picture? And they were all blown away because they had called the York County emergency manager, and they told them there was no damage in the county anywhere. So I told Robbie, I said, hey, this looks pretty bad. I'm going to try to come out there tomorrow and check it out. So I got up early the next day, drove out there, brought the drone. You saw the footage. I was just blown away. And right away, I could see these two turkey barns. He had 24,000 turkeys in these two barns. And immediately he tells me, I'm like, well, what's up with the turkeys? He's like, well, some of them died, but we don't know where the other ones are. So he thought he lost 4,000, but that number's down to about 1,200 because they still found some that were underneath the rubble that they're going to wait and collect. They're mostly small turkeys, not big ones. They raise them from an early age. But he said part of the barn, they didn't even know where it was. It was pretty extensive damage. So I guesstimated that day, just based on what I know, I thought it'd be EF1 because this barn actually had posts that were cemented into the ground and actually had some mobile home anchors that were used to anchor it down into the ground. So I said, right, I told him, I said, this is probably going to be EF1 damage, but I'd wait and see what the weather service came out. And then they
Here's
came
some
out.
Pictures. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, so they surveyed it today and, you know, found it was EF1 with 110-mile-an-hour winds. So it's one of those things in this day and age, you don't think a tornado goes unnoticed. But like I just wrote in my story about this for our website, WCNC.com, they had their friends and family helping them out. They didn't reach out to any emergency services, didn't call anybody. That's just the way they kind of roll out in rural York County. And so no one knew about it until he was nice enough to send me a picture. And that kind of got the ball rolling with everybody kind of figuring out. And then the TV crews are out there today and everybody else. So I used to joke, you know, we take for granted that very few tornadoes go undetected. They may go unwarned for, but eventually you hear about them or you see the damage. I'd say 20, 30 years ago, rural, Kansas, Oklahoma, there might be a farm hit by a tornado. And the only person that knew about it was the farmer himself. And this kind of reminded me of that. But in this day and age, if it wasn't for social media and a private message, I don't know if anybody would have known about this. And it was pretty extensive. I mean, that barn right there you're looking at, that was a well-built barn. Some of these other barns were, a little less well-built, but that was, that had electrical and plumbing because they had feeders and water to all the turkeys. So it was legit. I mean, and I'll tell you the thing that was kind of weird. I was walking around in the grass and I'm like, I thought all this white stuff all over the place was insulation. And then I looked down close. I realized there were feathers. There's feathers everywhere. I mean, just from the turkeys, it was nuts.
Well, the silver lining good news, as you mentioned, is that some of these turkeys who they originally thought perished did survive. Chris Mulcahy went out there today and saw some of them emerging from the rubble. And I think the drone footage you captured as well, too, speaks just to the local. Oh, speaking of Chris Mulcahy,
there
Chris. Hi, Chris. You're live. We were just talking about your tweet with the turkeys. Can you hear us? Apparently not yet.
Yeah, so I wanted. I'm glad Chris chimed in. He's got in here because I thought what he said was interesting in his report today. Yet the reason that they didn't know how many turkeys were lost is because they're kind of letting them kind of regather underneath the debris, and once they get back under there, they kind of regroup and then they'll scoop out the ones that are alive and kind of save them. So I thought that was interesting. That's why you saw the number go from 4,000 to 1,200 because they're starting to find some of the chicks that were buried under the rubble.
Yeah, and even the time that I was there, it was pretty crazy that you just saw more and more. And I thought it was really interesting from the owner. He says that we're waiting for them to get into groups and then we'll gather them up. That at one point for our live shot, I saw one or two, and the next thing you know, it was up to about 12. So that 1,200 number could even come down, as they just said a majority of them live. So that at least is a nice silver lining there.
Yeah, it's amazing because they said when they first went out there, it was crazy. Like they found groups of the turkeys just sitting there where the barn used to be. Like the building was lifted away and some of the turkeys were just still sitting there. The crazy things, Chris, I know you saw some of that, the sheet metal that was just everywhere, wrapped up into trees. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was blown so far. In fact, there was a Duke power station, I think about a mile away, where a piece of this tin had blown into the power lines and knocked out power to some of the area. But they got really lucky because on the other side of the hill where the tornado lifted was actually a mobile home development, and it could have went right through there and caused some significant damage.
they also have a lot of propane tanks around there, so they could have been dealing with some fires. So it's not a good scenario whatsoever. But yeah, and we also mentioned this during our report too, Brad. Those type of buildings, when a tornado gets a hold of them, it's like a mobile home. The winds just get into it, just picks it up, where foundation isn't as solidified as what we have like on our home. So once a tornado moves to those are just absolutely gone. And you saw that. But it was really interesting too, because if you're looking along the line of the foundation, you could just see where the tornado wrapped it, and it almost was spinning to that second building that had 12,000 turkeys for each, but the one that had less damage from what we saw in our video.
Yeah, James, I don't know. Do you have the picture of the tornado, or if I can screen share it possibly?
Yeah, either or.
Let me see.
There should be a button down there.
It's mine's crossed out. Oh, no, there it goes. Okay. Let me see if it'll let me show. So here's the picture. I'm going to share it now. So you guys see that? So
there it is.
That is, you're looking from his uncle's house, which is across the street, and you're looking back. So the house that you see in the foreground is actually the house on the farm, and the tornado's behind there, and all of that metal is part of those barns being lofted. So this was the first picture I got. You could imagine when I saw this, I was like, holy cow.
Yeah, and Brad, how high was this debris? I mean, I know radar is only so well in this area, but what was the estimated height of the debris ball signature?
So I'm glad you asked that, because I went back and looked at the CC data, and I saw it on this, at least the CC data, at about 10,000 feet, which I was impressed to see it get lofted that high. That's another indication of, you know, how strong the tornado is. There's a very good correlation to CC debris height based on what the EF scale is. So when I saw that, I was like, holy cow, this is a significant tornado. And it actually ended up correlating. It's a high-end EF1, you know, based on that damage being lofted to about, you know, 10,000 feet. What's interesting, and you got the four panel there, is the velocity data wasn't like overwhelming, but the CC data was more telling to me than anything.
Is this the spot here?
Yeah. So probably gonna go back a frame or two. It's a little bit better if you can go back. Yeah.
I got to re-rack it.
And in fact, those are two separate supercells. That one to the south actually prompted the tornado warning for Mecklenburg County. So yeah, both of those cells were really interesting.
Yeah, not much of a couplet signature there.
No.
I mean, obviously on the CC, but yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty spectacular damage. And I know Chris saw it firsthand, and you know, that was more than I expected when I went out there. I'm like, wow, the pictures I saw didn't do justice to it.
Yeah, even the aerial view, because like when you're really up into it, and Brad, you already said this, just the twisting of the metal. So you saw the pure force, and a lot of times they say EF2 is where cars can be lifted and stuff like that. It's stronger EF1s in that range. Anything over 100 miles per hour can lift all that. But I have to go back to the archives, and Brad, maybe you can help me this remembering, but what I thought was an interesting factoid, as I never said this on air, is the actual owner, the time that I got to talk to him, he says, like, well, we've been through this before. I was like, well, what do you mean? He said he thinks 15 years ago that the barn was fine. The barn that was had the rusty roof that was probably let's call it about 50 yards away from where the damage was. Well, a separate tornado 15 years ago went that path, but affected their homes and their cars. So now essentially every part of that property over the last 15 years has been impacted by a tornado of some sort.
Wow. Yeah. So I think I have a better, let me see if I have a better shot of this. This was the screen grab I got, guys. So if you look at southwest of Clover, you see that little lowering of the CC values. That's that little kink in the road right there is actually right where the barn was. That's their farm right there. So you could see, the couplet doesn't look all that impressive, but that CC value. And what was interesting was that, you know, if this was a looping image, you could see that kind of came on for about three scans and then it went away completely. And that's actually when we saw the tornado touchdown. The timing matched up exactly, with all the damage in the reports, from the people on the farm. What I thought was interesting too, and I love that Robbie was totally honest with me. He's like, because my phone went off and I didn't think anything about it and thought, nah, we're not getting hit by a tornado. And like a minute later, he sees the barn explode. So it was a good lesson. It's a good soundbite. I'll probably use that forever. Like, hey, you know, I always say, you know, tornado warnings are like seatbelts. You gotta use it even when you don't think it's going to happen, because you use it for the time that you need it. And so it really is one of those situations. and it spun up. I'll give credit to GSP too. They warned for that thing probably about 5 minutes before that CC lowering.
They ended up being very valuable.
Yeah.
Right about there.
Excellent job with that warning.
So they did a good job of that, by the way. Yeah. Okay. I mean, the thing they did great, and it's sometimes you see this, and I think almost amateur meteorologists go, oh, they wait till they see something on the radar. They're actually looking at the development of the circulation of the mesocyclone and trying to warn ahead of time. And that's hard to do. I mean, because you're taking a little bit of a chance, but they did a really good job of seeing this thing develop. Because even I, like 10, 15 minutes before, that storm didn't look like it was going to do much. So somebody was really on the ball keeping an eye on that cell.
I mean, I didn't want to accuse you of speeding to the TV station, but you did get there quickly.
Yeah, and I did park right in front of the building. That's my, I had to get here in a hurry, parking spot right by the front door.
Actually, Brad, I believe listening to Larry, I could hear you walk into the weather office as he was talking about it.
Well, just to peel back the curtain, what was going on? I knew it was going to happen, so I was getting ready, but literally my phone is going off while I'm shaving. And I'm trying to brush my teeth. And the thing is, my bosses all call me, right? And it's like, the last thing I need to do is answer the phone. I'm trying to get to the station, you know? So I got three calls. Where are you? I'm on my way, but I'm talking to you right now. So I got to get in the car. It's like, you know, sometimes I wish they would just let me drive. I'm on my way. You don't need to call. I know what's going on. So, so I got there as soon as I could. And of course, there's always traffic when you're trying to get to the station in a hurry. I only live 15 minutes from the station, but it probably took me just a little bit longer because of all the traffic.
As one of the few people still working remotely, I was in a meeting just like this, except for imagine the EAS goes off and then all of you guys scatter to go to your different corners of the newsroom. And I'm just watching now, like peering through like 12 different webcams in the newsroom, what's happening. I'll just start the stream. I got it. Bye. Oh,
yeah, you were on the ball. Actually, it was funny, James. I was watching the stream. I wasn't watching. I was listening in the car. I pulled up the stream and had it on my Bluetooth over my speaker so I could hear what Larry was talking about and what was going on as I was driving into the station. So
that's a good endorsement for our own product. Our own chief was listening to it.
Well, you know, it's a sad state of affairs. None of the local radio stations are simulcasting or even giving you data or information of what's going on. So your phone ends up being your best source of what's going on. So it was amazing. But that, I mean, it goes show you, we didn't know any of this stuff is going on until about 12 hours later, which to me is part of the story of this. It's like this thing happens and it wasn't just us. None of the TV stations in town, nobody else. You know, this was such a rural area that if Robbie had not sent me that picture, and not to toot my own horn, but the fact the second I tweeted it out, obviously every other station in town knows it. And so they start calling and asking questions, and that's how the ball starts rolling and people start showing up the next day. So, and we're out there today, and Chris, you know, did a great job heading out there because the visuals were amazing. I mean, I think being up next to it and actually seeing Chris next to that building really kind of told you how much damage there was.
Yeah, but Brad, can we also just talk about how unlucky this was? Because literally the start of the path of damage. So just down the hill from where I was, where you're seeing the leveling of the foundation, nothing there anymore. I would say maybe let's call it 30 yards down. There's a fence. There was another building there. And what was really interesting, too, is that there's a little hill. The tornado clearly skipped over that. That's where all the propane tanks were. So it kind of gives that mentality. Why do you go into a ditch to a lower place? Because it's similar in that fashion. But it's right at that fence line that it dropped down the field, came down through those buildings, started lifting over a third barn. And then you could see visually where parts of the trees where it was lifting up were just severed off. And then, Brad, you said you were able to see another part in the woods that dropped down briefly again.
Yeah, there was it was way back there. I mean, I went back on some four-wheelers. We drove all the way back in the woods.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, where are we at? Now, there's nothing back here. We come to this, what I thought was a clearing, but it was a big area of the woods that was completely flattened. And all the trees, some weren't flattened. They were all bent towards the convergent line in the middle of the tornado track, which is, as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh my gosh, this is textbook tornado damage, because you had trees bent towards the middle on one side and towards the other. And what's interesting, the video that you're looking at right now, this grass field from another perspective, when I was shooting back from the other way with the drone, there was actually some swirling in the grass. You could actually see some damage in the tall grass there. It was just incredible to see this thing skip up. And Chris, I noticed the same thing too. The interesting I thought immediately about the topography out there. This tornado was moving up elevation. I think I went back and looked at the elevation maps. That little holler back there. Yeah, so below the barn there, I think it's at about 600 feet, and the top of that hill is about 720. So it was moving uphill, and I've seen similar research from like Huntsville, Alabama, and some of the other foothills where you get rotating thunderstorms that move up in elevation, sometimes induce tornado genesis because you're effectively shrinking the distance between the cloud base and the ground. You know, sometimes we look for LCL levels or LCLs that are really low. Well, sometimes the ground comes up and makes the LCL lower. And this can happen in these situations like we saw here. And I thought that was fascinating that the hill probably played a little bit of a role in enhancing this storm a little bit.
So yeah, you can see that too. Oh, it's like right at that first barn too, that was where it was most intense. That's where it had the contact because it got up over the hill. It got its full suction, its full potential. And then I know that the pull path was like 0.47, but I would say it's less than a tenth of a mile that it was really the full absolute contact of the ground where it was the worst.
Reminding folks watching live with us, you can comment. We'll put some of your comments on the screen. Shout out to Michael watching on YouTube. I want to hit on a couple of things you guys talked about. Chris talked about how unlucky this was, how short-lived it was, and how impactful it was. We talk about all the times about how a tornado is like a pin on a map, but if it happens to be right where you are, how bad it can be. Yesterday was National Weather Observation Day?
Yeah.
Weather Observer Day? Yeah. Yeah, so Brad, to your point, this was a text to you that not only brought out the media, but brought out the Weather Service to do what they do after these storms, to conduct a storm survey after you essentially went storm survey first.
Yeah, it's you know, it's funny. Sometimes I go out there and I always tell the people when I get out there, I'm one of those people, you know, I think people, hey, you work in TV, but I'm still a meteorologist at heart. So a lot of times after these events, I like going out to the location and seeing what happened, because it's a great learning experience for us as meteorologists to see what happened on the ground. So sometimes I know I'm out there more as a scientist sometimes than as a reporter. So people tend to open up and treat you a little differently when you're asking weather geek questions more so than just grilling them on the simple reporter type questions. So when I went out there, I really was just more interested. I was looking at the damage, the gouging in the ground. I really was trying to do what the Weather Service does. I was looking for those damage indicators to try to figure out how long it was on the ground. And it was funny. I actually told Robbie, I said, the Weather Service is going to be the official word on this, but I think this is EF1. And the track is probably a half a mile to three quarters mile. Ended up being EF1 and a half mile track. And that's pretty much spot on to what it looked like to me. So at least I knew I was looking at the same things that they were. And it gave me a little bit of pride that I kind of learned something from them when I see them do damage surveys. And those damage indicators are everything when you're looking for certain traits for what a tornado is actually going to be classified as.
Well, let's also remind everyone else out there that if you have weather impact you where you are first, and then if you don't have Brad Panovich's cell phone number to text him, you can tweet him, and that will suffice as well. And if you're outside the Charlotte area, or even if you are, you could always send him to the National Weather Service. We work cohesively with our friends at NWS.
Well, and to me, I wanted to make sure they were able to verify that warning, because that's a big deal to them to be able to say, hey, because they issued three warnings and you know, that would have been the only one they verified. So it really helps them tremendously to go out and verify. That's why they go out there and do it. Give credit to Raleigh. You know, they came and surveyed all the way out in Stanley County, which is at the far western part of their CWA, and got that survey done earlier in the morning. So that was pretty impressive as well.
Now, I don't want to call them out. That one in Stanley County was not warned. Yeah. Only bring it up because of the darn radar. Yeah. Do you think that would have made a difference?
Yeah, I mean, hindsight's 20/20, and as soon as I got those damage pictures, I went back and looked at the terminal Doppler radar data, and I right away said, oh, yeah, that's a tornado, because the velocity couplet there was very impressive, and it was in the exact same location. But that's the thing. That's the thing about the terminal Doppler. Everyone thinks that's a super fix. You got to remember, that's looking at a whole different product than they're normally. They're looking at 88Ds primarily, and they hatched a switch to a separate radar, you know, to look at that. So if I'm in Raleigh and GSP, I'm primarily looking at my radar, and to have to bounce and back and forth between another radar source is just another step in the warning process that kind of slows things down. So I don't, you know, the thing is, it's like, I think both weather service offices know it's a problem, and we're just trying to highlight that so we can get a fix.
And that's the only reason I call them out.
Yeah. I mean, it's
fault.
It's got to be a problem. They need better tools. I mean, any good artist or contractor needs good tools to do their job. And so I think they would love to see another radar. And that's a whole nother show. But that process is still rolling, guys. I can tell you it's close. It's close. The funding is almost there. And I can feel it.
You're already saying you'll come back to update us.
Yeah. I'll just tell you, we are as close as I think we've ever been to doing this private-public partnership and getting radars installed in this big radar hole. And I give a lot of credit to the local COGS, which are the Council of Governments. They have really aggressively gone after funding on their own, grants and separate funding, and just said, we're not going to wait for the federal government or the state. We're just going to do it on our own. And they are really taking. So what the process we're in right now, just to like give everybody update, there's currently basically an environmental studies going on, and currently feasibility studies are being conducted for this project, which you have to do to get government money of anywhere. So the fact that that's actually being undertaken right now, local universities are starting to work on this. That's the first step, is the feasibility studies. And the next step will be, you know, how many radars, which vendor we're going to get, and going from there. But we've made it a long way, so it's close.
What kinds of radar are we talking about? Are we going to go full upgrade to phased array, or are we still gonna
I wish, Shay. No, we've kind of settled in on C-band, because you can't actually – you can't get S-band anymore because the FCC has kind of locked down that frequency. And so we can't do an S-band. We would love to do that. And X-band is kind of a waste. You need like a bazillion of little, they're tiny little ones, and they have all kinds of attenuation problems. So powerful C-band radars that are dual pole, three of them placed in a, basically my goal is, you know, my ideal world would be 3 million watt C-bands that are dual pole that would be placed in strategic spots across the Piedmont, which would fill a hole not just for me in Charlotte, but people in the triangle, you know, Greensboro, Winston, and then
are
the
these
foothills.
Still the spots?
Oh, there you go. Those are the general spots. So Charlotte, we get overlap, which is great, but it fills a huge void up there in the northwestern part of the state, which is, you know, up in the foothills, which gets very poor coverage, up into the Boone area, Wilkesboro, Statesville. So a lot of holes will be filled, and even parts of the Sandhills, which are in a big gap too between the Raleigh office and GSP. So every time we get a tornado, it just seems more evident like why we need these radars. Yeah. But I hope it doesn't take a major disaster to get this through, but it's rolling along. So that's the good news.
We put a link in the comments to that episode that I just had up on the screen when Brad was on talking about this initiative. If you want to learn more about why it's a problem and where those are going to be, because yes, we have a whole hour on that, and it's excited to hear that that's coming along. Guys, I want to talk about Abbeville and Greenwood, but before I shift there, any other questions or comments on this topic for the Charlotte area of York County and Stanley County with their tornadoes?
Yeah, so real quick before we move away from it, Chris, you made the note on the family said there had been another tornado. I sorted through the SBC archives real quick while y'all were chatting, and I couldn't find anything. Not to say that there wasn't some unsurveyed tornado that went on out there. Clearly, stuff happens there and may not get reported. So that's interesting. An interesting note.
Thanks for doing that. I appreciate it. And there's a reason why I didn't say it on air, just because I wasn't really going to have the opportunity to go out there. And I didn't want that there was some sort of like microburst that we're calling a tornado. So thank you for doing that. And yeah, that's why we always did fact check. So well done, sir.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's like when I got the picture, I was like, yeah, it's horrible. I'm totally skeptical. You're like, you think you're getting a fake picture right away. And the next thing you question is, why isn't there video of this? That's a great picture. Why? I need some motion there. But that's a rare case where that's a still image that shows both the funnel and the debris, mm-hmm. which makes it pretty much a no-brainer. I don't know how many times I see stills of a dark cloud and I have no idea if it's Scud. You know, is it low cloud? Because it's not moving. You just have no frame of reference. And so anybody watching, one thing, if you're going to send pictures and video, tornadoes and rotating storms, video is way better because we can actually tell if something is rotating. And we're looking for horizontal rotation. Vertical rotation happens in every single thunderstorm. So you get a lot of those up and down movements, which is pretty common. So the horizontal rapid movement is what we're looking for. And that becomes huge, a huge help to us. And I think, James, that's a good point. I don't think I can say this enough. Of all the things, social media, good and bad, that I've dealt with since I've been on social media, stuff like this makes me so excited for the good that social media can do, because I get way more great information sent to me than I even post. I think people think we just broadcast stuff out, but the information we get back from the everyday viewer and weather watcher and spotter and just the hobbyist is such a tremendous help to us. And you got to think it's helping other people downstream of the storm that are looking at these pictures and video and going, holy cow, I need to take this storm seriously. Look what it did to my west or to my southwest. You just don't know how valuable that is to communicating severe weather threats, because radar is great, but most people, like James Spanstead, looks like spilled paint on a map. A picture, a video is worth 1,000 words and really gets people to act quicker.
Well, we just did a storm spotter training here at the Carolina Weather Group with the National Weather Service in Columbia. And so, yeah, if you're a storm spotter, you get the phone number, you can call them up, you can text people that you might know. But if you're not sure who to contact and you're on Twitter, if all else fails, they're on their screen right now. Hashtag NCWX, hashtag SCWX. You put a storm report, a weather observation in there. If the weather service doesn't see it directly, one of us will, and the other meteorologist and the weather group in the Carolinas, and that will be a place where that can get relayed from the public. You don't need any special credentials to use that hashtag. So I'm with Brad in that. I'm always slightly skeptical, but that is a place you could drop something if you wanted to get it out.
Well, Evan, it's nice because we're like peer review it. We all look at it. Everyone gets eyeballs on it, and we can all kind of evaluate what it is. But I'm telling you, man, Twitter's becoming the way that the Weather Service is getting this information, because I'm shocked. I'll retweet something, and within a couple minutes, I'll get a message from them. Hey, can you get an address for where that was? Because it's like they are monitoring Twitter like crazy. So Twitter is a great tool to get information to the Weather Service.
No, you're absolutely right. Between NWS chat and Twitter, those are the two main forms of communication. Absolutely.
Ev, you talked a moment ago about how you gathered some data, and I want to use this segue into talking about the next big tornado that we saw here in the Carolinas. But tell us about this map that you made.
Yeah, James. So we had a tornado touchdown near Lownsville, we think that's pronounced, South Carolina, on Monday, same day as that York County tornado. And it ended up tracking for close to 30 miles, which is a pretty rare occurrence here in the Carolinas. Only lots of handfuls, but less than 50 tornadoes have ever tracked that far in the Carolinas. So this one down near Lownsville is going to rank in the top 2% of the longest tornadoes in Carolina history. You can see we've got it circled with some really small dashed white lines there on the map. And the top 1% for South Carolina. And I believe it came in as the 18th longest tornado track in South Carolina. So 18th, it's certainly, you could say it's on the leaderboard if we make it a really big leaderboard. But I believe Brad, and it may have been you who tweeted this, was this the first 30-mile track since, or the longest track since 2011?
I think you're correct. Yeah, I think you are correct. Because I mean, I keep thinking about 2011 all the time. It's like, it seems like we haven't had a significant tornado since that outbreak. Because it's funny you say that, because I had like so many questions when I posted that track. People are like, is that a long track? I was like, yeah, that is not rare to be on the ground that long. And if I'm not mistaken, and Evan, I saw on your map, isn't today the anniversary of that Cleveland County EF4?
Is it?
Yeah, I want to say that show? Was that 1989? Because it just rings a bell to me, because 1989 was Hugo, and I think that was also EF4 year. So people always try to equate those two, but they weren't.
We had three EF4s, two actually here in the foothills, one in Cleveland, Lincoln, and Catawba. The other one from Greenville and Spartanburg up into Relaford County. It's been going around here in the foothills on the Facebook and Twitter today, the anniversary of 32 years ago. I believe the F4 is the strongest tornado that's occurred in North Carolina. And so that was the anniversary today with three of them here in the Carolinas. So Yeah, it's looking back at that event, like you said, Brad was also associated with Hugo later on in the year. So 1989 was a very big deal for the weather community in the Carolinas.
Yeah.
Well, all right. So we, go ahead, guys.
No, I was just going to say we've already used the mapping budget for the day, so that one will have to wait until tomorrow. We spent all the margarita money on that.
That's right. Well, what I wanted to comment, and we are live tonight, it's open mic night, Bob Chambers watching on Facebook, confirming that, Evan, you did say it correctly. Now, Bob is also one of the folks that let us know we made a boo-boo yesterday. I made a boo-boo yesterday in posting on YouTube about this storm, and I'd like to try to redeem myself now for Bob and the others who pointed it out. So this is that Abbeville and Greenwood County tornado again. Tonight, we're looking from the Greenville Spartanburg radar as opposed to the Columbia radar. And what I want to point out is that, and looking at the top right now at velocity, we've got two areas of circulation, kind of a northern and a southern one. Last night, I incorrectly circled the southern one when talking about this 30-mile long EF2 tornado. It should be this guy right up here that is the EF2 tornado. So my apologies in yesterday's error, but if I can make even the slightest excuse, we had so many polygons going on with this section of the Carolinas. As you guys might remember, they were tracking the tornado warnings that eventually gave way to the severe thunderstorm warnings because of the threat from these storms. And Evan, you were on the air on our streams covering this. Do you remember what it was like when they confirmed, when the Weather Service confirmed that there was a tornado on the ground, PDS damaging? I mean, that's no joke.
Yeah, that was really surprising. I was not expecting a PDS warning to come out of that. I don't believe we even saw a debris signature on the radar, a TDS, until after Lownsville, which makes sense. That is where the tornado started. But I really want to say that PDS warning came a whole lot sooner than I was expecting, before I even saw that debris signature on radar. So that was surprising. We also had that second storm, the one that you incorrectly circled, James, just over the border near Carlton. That might have been the name of it, in Georgia. That thing was a beast as it was wrapping up. It looked very concerning.
Right on in here. This is the state line, if I'm not mistaken, right? So, yeah, these things are coming out of Georgia. And right on in here is that debris signature you were just talking about. And then you can see those two continuing to track east. 30 miles, still incredible.
Yeah, it had a very small, very tight couplet. A broad area for concern there as it passed through Lownsville, but it quickly wrapped up and became pretty apparent where that tornado was, and that it was on the ground for quite a while as the National Weather Service.
Now, we should mention there was one injury associated with this, an individual who was on his porch and was sucked off his porch. We don't know the extent of that person's injury based on the storm report. I have two thoughts to come to mind. I'm relieved. One is too many injuries, but I'm relieved the number wasn't higher for an EF2 tornado with winds of 125 miles an hour at its peak on the ground for 30 miles. And also the fact that this is so rare. This is so incredible that, you know, yes, we have the tornado, but also wind is wind, right? As we often say so often on this show. And so there are other threats associated with this, not to make light of the tornado, but in the bottom left, look at, I can't imagine, as we're all talking about the tornado, just to the south, the hail that was being dropped in this other storm. So not only were these the tornado, but I'm going to go ahead and say it was hail wrapped at times. If you were trying to look at it from miles away, right? It's always the coast storm chasing real well in the Carolinas because it's not Oklahoma. You just don't have that visibility. Also, maybe don't be outside on your porch when a tornado's coming, because that's not the safe place to be.
Well, and also, like, I know that it's like, oh, okay, like how long that it was on the ground. But Brad, you know this. Most of our tornadoes that in this year and just in general are usually on the ground for 1, 2, 3 minutes, because this is spin up central. So wherever we're talking about the long tracks and great digging up the facts, We're just happy that this wasn't through our area, and also where it was, because if this was a little bit more populated, this would be a story that'd be happening for days. So it's all about the population, sadly. And really, I think about this all the time. How many tornadoes that happen that we don't know about, especially of the spin-up variety, just because of where they are?
Yeah, I thought what also was unique about those storms, guys, was that we had a special mesoscale discussion for those two supercells at one point, because the Storm Prediction Center was like, they knew those were probably going to be long track supercells, and who knew those things could attract all the way to Columbia eventually, and they had a little bit of a hint of a right mover to them because they were kind of churning a little bit into the flow, which was coming from the south. The tornadoes that are up by us were all moving northeast. These tend to be moving more easterly, so they had a little bit of a right churn to them, which for the layman, you don't know, when it's churning to the right, it's churning into that inflow, which increases the low-level helicity and really spins those things up quickly.
I'm trying to get to Bob's question about damage in Elberton on the Georgia side, and let me take a quick look at that. And I'm trying to remember right now who would have even had jurisdiction, whether that would
there
be
was
Columbia.
A tornado reported there.
Yeah.
Near Elberton.
I'm going to go ahead and screen share.
1400 block of Bowman Highway. Down trees and damage to metal buildings was reported to the Weather Service there. That was right before 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Let me add Peachtree City to my shortcut, because I don't normally have Peachtree City in here. But I know they're going to have jurisdiction of some of this over towards Athens, Georgia. I don't remember how far they get to.
Yeah.
Where is
I thought that Elbert County was a GSP county, but I'm not sure.
I can't remember exactly where this boundary is either. That really threw me off a little yesterday.
It goes one county into Georgia.
Peachtree City or GSP or Columbia, and I'm not sure which one.
Yeah, so here are some of the storm reports. Here's some of that hail we talked about, 1.75 inches. Let's see what this one is. That's 1-inch size hail. This one closer to the border, 1.5 ping pong size. So we've got, here's that injury.
James, I'll show you the damage surveys here.
Sure.
I think I can bring them up. So there's the surveys between, I mean, it's going to bounce around here, but you can see that the different surveys done by, and again, I'm going to change the date here so that it's up to date here. We'll change this to the second.
You still got to use Windows Explorer for this thing? Internet.
It seems like it. There we go. So can you guys see that now?
Yeah.
So you can see there was a tornado in Madison County, Georgia, and then a tornado in Elbert, and then it looks like another tornado, then one near Athens, it looks like. And then there was that tornado west of Atlanta, which actually happened earlier in the day as well.
When we are now casting, that was kind of the first indication that this thing was really coming together.
Yeah. So that's based on the surveys, and those red lines are the CWA cutoffs. So you can see Peachtree City to the left, GSP, and then Columbia there. So yeah, this is the damage assessment tool, and this is a really cool product because out in the field, the Weather Service will actually have a tablet or a phone, and they have an app, and they will enter the damage survey, and it gets relayed automatically into this product and starts displaying them. Back in the office, they'll start lining things up with the radar as well to get the timing. So it's kind of cool to watch this. When I see a survey, I can actually individual plot in real time as the survey crew is out there. It's a really neat product.
Now we are again live tonight on this May the 5th for open mic night here on the Carolina Weather Group. We've got another question that came in a little bit earlier. Hopefully Michael is still with us. Shay, you want to take this one? And I think he's talking, is he talking about tonight now?
Nope, I think he's talking about in general. Let's see, trying to see where that question went. Upper air pattern right now is crazy. Where was all this back in January and February? We might have actually had some decent snow in the Piedmont, I'm assuming, Piedmont, North Carolina. Upper air pattern has been a little bit strange for Eastern United States and Central Northern Europe as well. So when we talk about upper air patterns, we look at the polar jet in general, where we see the winter trying to hang on through spring, right? So we're talking about January, February. And back then, you know, we look at a lot of things in the wintertime. We look at the polar jet, we look at the polar vortex, we look at polar circulation. So if we take a look, just share screen here. Just to give you an idea of what, you know, what it kind of looks like here is, here's your polar jet, right? And so all of the circulations and polar vortex that are part of low pressures over the Arctic are pulled down into different areas of the world. This really depends on the flow of it, and a lot of it has to do with an index called the Arctic Oscillation. And so when we're in a negative oscillation, that means we tend to see polar vortex displacement. We get all kinds of waves that dive down. We have the dipping jet stream, which you hear about in the wintertime, which brings cool air down. We didn't see a lot of that in the southeast where it would stick. We would get grazed by it, where we never really got any the negative oscillation, which would pull it down and hold it over the area to instill that storm setup for the winter storms. And this occurred in Europe as well. So if we look at, see if I can find this, blow it up a little bit. I can figure that out. Here we go. So this is the AO observed. And we see in January, this was largely negative, but not far negative. It was pretty mild. It really dipped down about the middle of February and then really jumped back up. So this is a really jumpy pattern for the AO, going up to positive, back down to negative, back up to positive, down to neutral, and so on and so forth. So a really jumpy situation. This isn't pretty much symptomatic of where you see subtropical jet stream starting to lift north and affect these areas with warmer weather, making the AO more positive. But as far as January, February is concerned, we did see negative AO, not anything extreme, but we just didn't get that pattern over the eastern United States. I know that central northern Europe saw a little bit more of that than us, where we got more of that, the polar vortex displacement over on that side of the world versus ours. Now you have the Siberian connection as well. So the northern tier of the United States, northeastern United States saw a lot of activity. But if anybody else on the panel would like to chime in as well, maybe Brad or anyone else that's pretty familiar with these patterns, especially for that area of the Piedmont, North Carolina, that'd be great.
Yeah, I think the whole northern hemisphere has had a chaotic pattern, because you mentioned this, Shay. In Europe, they had a crazy cold April. They had snow and frost, and I think they're still going through what has just been like another month of winter there. So typically when we see extreme weather in other part of the hemisphere, there's a dip there. There's going to be a ridge somewhere else. And I think that's what's caused the pattern to be a little more chaotic here. Overall, this spring, though, is kind of been interesting. It's been very not La Nina-like. I would have expected even more severe weather in April into early May, and I would have expected it to be warmer. And really, it's been, I wouldn't say it's been cold, but it's been kind of coolish to near normal, which is saying something, because the last several springs around here have been anything but cool. They've been really warm and kind of wet. So it's been a very interesting spring, to say the least. But I would have expected more severe weather, honestly, guys. I know it seems like we've had a lot, but I think we had a record low number of tornadoes in the month of April across the U.S. in general. So it's just been other types of synoptic weather. It's been more synoptic craziness with cold snaps and a lot of late freezes, especially here in the Carolinas, and not a whole lot of severe weather so far.
Right. Do you think La Nina had a lot to do with not having as much wintry precip or winter storms in January, February than what we would normally encounter?
I do. The La Nina winter, the warm part of the La Nina pattern kind of shaped up perfectly. The lack of rain did not. We had a very wet winter, but it was warm. It was warm and wet. So I do think that had a huge, huge play. I hate La Nina winters. As a winter weather lover, it's like the worst winter, because you don't get snow and then you get all this severe weather late in the winter and early spring, which is like, you know, we tend to get big tornado outbreaks in late February, March in La Nina winters. Is what you don't want to see. So I think it did have a big impact. But it'll be interesting to see this impact on the summer. I've seen a lot of people do summer forecasts already, and I kind of laugh, because it's like summer's either hot or really hot. And to me, there's not a whole lot of in between. To me, the biggest summer forecast I want to know is how dry or wet it's going to be, because I'm worried, because it's been dry across the Carolinas in April and here in May, and usually dry springs do not bode well for summer. That usually means hot, dry summers are in the offing.
And yeah, these dew points we saw recently are some of the lowest that I've seen this time of year. It was absolutely incredible just seeing some of those record-breaking lows to end the year. Like, how low did our dew points get, Brad? I think I saw them down in the lower 20s, even somewhere in the 20 ranges. Yeah, so.
Yeah, that freeze we had, I think, was it the 26th of April? That's the third coldest temperature, or I say third latest freeze on record in Charlotte. That's pretty late in the year. And to consider the growing season started like in early March, we had a lot of plant issues. And thank goodness the peach crop wasn't heavily devastated. But these late freezes are becoming a big problem around here in the Carolinas because the growing season's starting earlier, but we're still getting the late freeze.
Chris, as we start to wind... Oh, go ahead, Shay.
I was just going to say, I certainly hope, Brad, that we don't have a super dry. We've seen a little bit of a dry spring here so far, and we're hoping to sort of steer away from that. This unsettled weather the last couple of days has been helping us now, at least in the lowlands of the low country of South Carolina. But one thing we start to look for at the end of May and into June is heat waves. So we get triple ridges, right? So if you have high pressure that sets up over the Northeast Gulf, right over the Appalachians and out over the Atlantic, that's trouble. So we're hoping that a subtropical jet will lift far enough north to keep the moisture pattern coming from the Gulf up over towards the mid-Atlantic.
Yeah,
This past Monday was the first time I think that it actually felt like it was going to storm to start off the day. I think we all can agree that it's been so dry. You walked outside and was like, "Yep, here we go, guys."
Yeah, my lawn's green. I got to keep it that way.
Not the case over here.
Mine's really tall and weedy. Okay. Chris, before we go, you talked to Stuart Wood on the show last year to talk about weather decision support at the PGA Tour. They're at Quail Hollow this week here in Charlotte for the Wells Fargo Championship. What did Stuart tell you?
Well, first off, we did this interview on Friday, and he was already saying, I was like, well, the beginning of next week's going to be interesting. So Stuart nailed it first off. But I think that he has one of the coolest meteorology jobs in the world because he travels the world. For one, it was really interesting to see about just starting off in California, and then next thing you know, he's talking about his time in Japan, in Great Britain. So I thought that was fantastic, and I was like, why didn't I choose that meteorology job? But no, I thought it was really interesting just because he really was harping on the use of technology, how it has grown his job over the last 20 years for what he can actually bring out with him with lightning detection especially. So having that at his fingertips, I think, has been really helpful being able to get people off the course a whole lot sooner. But it's very, very interesting. Hopefully you can try to get that story tomorrow that we'll have it on WCNC. We've been trying to push it all week. But his interview I thought was fascinating. He really was talking about the change in the industry as all of us have seen that has helped out his job. And he does a fantastic job out there. And if you're ever wondering how the call is made, as soon as he sees the weather, he does have a direct supervisor. Two of them kind of look at the radar that's on his system, and they're going to make the calls. And obviously, they had to do that on Monday.
Yeah, he put out this tweet at about the same time we were talking a little earlier about this was Monday time frame. We put this up on the screen. Lots of clicking. Here it comes. Right. So this is him tweeting, but giving us a snapshot. This had to be what, 11 a.m. on Monday, right before it rolled into York County, maybe 11:30 or so. And so this is what he's doing all this week here in Charlotte and following them around across the nation and I guess the world, right? Because I think he talks about having ship their stuff all over the world.
And Stuart, by the way, is from North Carolina. So he says that it is good to be home and was super excited about this trip. He always looks forward to coming back to Charlotte for the Wells Fargo.
We have put in our comments a shameless plug back to our interview with Stuart Williams this time last year. So you can find that in the comments right now if you're watching on the Carolina Weather Group. Brad, Chris, thank you for joining our open mic night. You guys are welcome to stick around. I want to be appreciative of your time as well, too, because I know some of the other guys here probably have some thoughts they want to get in before we wrap. We got some products we want to shamelessly promote and let people know coming down the pipeline. And Scotty, were you going to say something? You looked like you were going to speak up.
I was just going to say it's about time we get Chris on the show. I know we've been trying for a long time. So, Chris, I'm glad you're on. And see, we don't bite, so we'd love to have you back some other time.
No, I'll come again. I was actually telling my wife, and I was just like, man, I feel like either I'll forget or something happens. But now today, we are in the Carolina Weather Group. Good to be a part of the team, guys.
I told them right before the show, I said, Chris texted me. and he says he's running a few minutes late. Uh-huh. I think that means he's actually coming.
Yeah, that's usually what it is. If I'm coming, I'm going to be at least 10 minutes late. So just know that a Mulcahy will just pop up in the box next time.
Yeah. It was good timing, too. It was right on cue.
All right. There we go. It's like I planned.
Work in television.
Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. It's been a pleasure. I'm going to head out and let me know about the next one. This is a good group. I had a lot of fun.
We're here every week.
Okay, well, perfect.
Evan, why don't you tell us what you got cooking on the website? I think it's just been a minute since we talked about CarolinaWeatherGroup.com. You're muted, I think. No. He's speechless. Can anybody else hear him?
No.
Nope. No, I'm good now. I was stuck on the screen. Every time I clicked unmute, it was just typing M's on Twitter.
Maybe we could use closed captioning if that helps.
Lip readers, we'll get one in here. So the website, yeah, it's been a few minutes since I've spent some quality time on there, but we did put a lot of work into it in March and April. We're revamping it. We've got a blog started up. We have a current conditions page that was built and looked really pretty, and then it broke, and now I need to go fix it again.
Someone needs to know that. You can just tell them it's great.
It's great. Yeah. And then we also have the Blue Ridge Parkway closure map, which is a...
Yeah, talk about that again, in case people missed our interview about it. What is this all about?
Sure. Yeah, so it's a little bit of a... We don't need it as much this time of year, but come fall... Right, so
this is the time of year I might still go and check out the Blue Ridge. It's still pretty.
Right. Well, we get closures on the Blue Ridge Parkway in fall, winter, and early spring. Right now, it's mostly open, except for Virginia. We're not sure what they're doing up there.
But for right now, it's mostly open.
Come fall, when these closures really start to return and start hitting hard, you can come to this webpage and check it for road closures all along the Blue Ridge Parkway. It'll have which sections are closed will be highlighted in red. We've got a little highlight section, I guess you can call it, in the bottom right of some of the best spots to visit. Cracky Gardens, Mountain Mitchell, Peaks of Otter, I believe, is up in Virginia. Some of those are listed. If it's green, it's open. If it's not green, it's not open. It's real simple and easy to read. So I think they're kind of useful. I've used it a good number of times when I go snow chasing.
CarolinaWeatherGroup.com also have a state park map. So up there or anyplace else, you can actually plan your outdoor adventure day. I guess it was not too hot of a day to go hiking out towards Fayetteville today.
On it. Click on one of those red dots and see what happens.
Okay.
On air, live, hey. Let's see if it works.
It works.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah, so this is a hiking conditions map, and this is something that will be fleshed out a bit more in coming months with some more details to come on that later. But it basically shows all the state parks in North and South Carolina. If it's a good weather day, it'll be green and it'll say, go on a hike. If it's a bad weather day, it'll be red and that state park we recommend you don't go visit it. It's either lightning, which is totally a verb now, or it's rainy. I've got a bunch of different words built into this script for it to register and to recognize bad weather and report it as a bad day to go hiking. So lots of green across South Carolina. It can be a little bit tricky at nighttime. Best to check it after 10 a.m. in the morning.
Very cool. That is stuff on CarolinaWeatherGroup.com. Now, those graphics you got there talking about the forecast remind me a little bit of Carolina Weather Net. And for those of you who are not familiar, we do have a nonstop, free, open to the public, all things Carolina weather, feed, stream, channel extravaganza. You can find it anytime on our YouTube. So if you are not subscribed to us on YouTube, here it comes. Hit the bell, hit the subscribe, hit the like, all those things that you do on YouTube so that you can be notified when we go live for severe weather coverage, but also every day for the Carolina Weather Net, which brings you the best of the Carolina Weather Group alongside real-time warnings and cameras and conditions and forecasts. And so we want to make sure that everyone knows that that is available on our YouTube. I don't have our YouTube up on the screen, but you'll have to take my word for it. But I would actually love to show folks real briefly what this looks like, because I'll tell you that I like to watch it not so much on my phone or my computer, which I can, of course, do, but I like to put it on my TV using the YouTube app on Roku. And then you got this, whether you're working from home or hanging out on the couch, right? There's my ugly face that I didn't do intentionally, but you can see how some of the real-time conditions are cycling through there. I know. I love my face. Isn't it great? Let's find somebody else's face. There's another face and another face. So you can see we've got shows that come on in through here, and you can watch them. We've got your local forecast at 25 and 55 past every hour, and it's really intended for you to just put it on, leave it on while you're cleaning or hanging out or doing work. And on days like Monday and Tuesday, when there are warnings happening, there's a big red shiny ticker that will come on the air letting you know about the warnings. And then eventually, if it gets upgraded to a tornado warning and then we feel like it's a life-threatening newsworthy situation, you'll see our ugly faces coming on to tell you about live weather. So you can, again, just leave it on, let it run, and we'll take it from there.
We normally like doing severe weather coverage. That's one thing I would like to address, because if you were watching, we all do have full-time jobs. So at sometimes during the day, especially during the afternoon hours, it's hard for some of us to break away if severe weather is ongoing. And we're very appreciative of Evan and Frank, I believe, was on air Monday. Yep. Covering the event. So if we're not streaming, you can definitely watch the Carolina Weather Net, and you'll see radar running. And I guarantee you at least one of us will be tweeting or retweeting stuff too on our social media pages. So we'll get it covered one way or another. But sometimes we all do this for free. It's all volunteer work. So we have our regular jobs to attend to as well. So we love to get on and live stream as much as possible. Sometimes it just can't happen.
That is one of the other purposes of Carolina WeatherNet. It has some automation for you and for us. Because just like Brad was talking about earlier in the show, it takes you a moment to get to the microphone. And so the technology will help with that. We you're right, Scotty. We don't get paid. We don't get paid to be here. We love just geeking out, and we think it's a privilege to geek out with you all and to be able to bring you important severe weather bullets. But if you've got a few bucks, and here it comes, you got a few bucks to spare and you want to keep the show running, because it does cost money to run the Carolina Weather Net and to bring in all those data feeds and to, keep lights on, patreon.com/Carolina Weather Group. That is how you can give us your most loyal support and converse with us directly, get early access to episodes, obviously not live episodes like tonight, because I would need a DeLorean or a time machine of some sort in order to get that to you ahead of time. But when we have pre-produced episodes like with James Spann or Jim Cantore, they're going to our patrons first at patreon.com/Carolina Weather Group. It's just a few bucks. You get early access. You become a supporting member of the show. We love you the most. All of those most important things that we want to say. And to those of you who have already started to support the show on Patreon, thank you. If you don't have a few bucks or don't wish to participate in Patreon right now, that's okay. We would just ask that maybe you download and subscribe to our podcast or subscribe to us on YouTube, because those are two platforms that we do get some third-party monetization from. And so that is a way, without costing you any money, to help us grow business and as a group. So find us wherever you listen to your podcast or check us out on YouTube. If you're watching on Facebook, that's cool. Glad you're here. Facebook does nothing to help us. So that's why we're often trying to push you onto other platforms.
While you're subscribing on YouTube and on the podcast form, we'd love your rating as well. That's something we've not really pushed as well. Give us a rating. You can also tell us what you like and what you don't like, and maybe some suggestions of topics or guests or whatever else you'd like to talk about. Maybe more of these open mic nights, because we all like to geek out and talk about weather.
But, we just had
we're doing this for you.
Somebody just commented during a recent stream, and we've added it to the list of shows we're going to look into. And I'm trying to find the message now, but it was the tornado outbreak of March of 2010. Somebody mentioned it during a stream,
we didn't have something for me to shamelessly plug from the archive. And so we've put it on the list for things to us to look into.
I guarantee you this time next year, we're going to be doing a show about the 1989 tornado outbreak that happened in the Carolinas, because pretty big deal. F4 tornadoes in North Carolina. That's a biggie. So
that's crazy. Jordan, how are things with you, my friend?
Going well. Enjoying the show.
We have a little tease for Jordan. We're going to be talking to him about a new product he's come up with.
Oh, I think he's frozen.
Oh, there he is.
I'm back. Yeah.
Jordan, you have a new product to tease us with?
Oh, yeah. A wet bulb globe temperature climatology. That's up on SERP.com. So go check it out. It's really cool.
Very cool. Very cool. We are weather nerds, just like all of you watching. And so we do appreciate you watching and spreading the word. Guys, anything else we want to get in on tonight's open mic night?
I want to mention one more thing. This is something we've been talking about internally. We're going to continue producing these long form podcasts, but I do believe we're going to start doing some more short version podcasts some of us have some interest. And so be looking on the lookout for that over the summertime. I think Evan's going to be doing some stuff with his GIS map making, and we'll do an interview with Jordan. And these are going to be more like your short shows. What is it you call it? James, I feel like you have a wording you always tell us, like just a little sound bite, like a 10-minute show about a certain thing. What is that word you always tell me?
I know, because you're asking me.
I can't remember.
They're bite-sized snackables.
Snackables. That's it. So we're going to be doing more snackables for you all. So be on the lookout for that as well.
That's what I was trying to do yesterday when I circled the wrong rotation on the radar and uploaded it to YouTube. Evan, what type of cool GIS things are we going to do? Like Evan's favorite, like fried chicken places, or?
Yes. So we have to do something with Waffle House. That's just, we owe it to Waffle House. We owe it to ourselves to get on in there and to do something fun with it. I'm sure we'll do something 3D. I like 3D stuff. Something with tornadoes. I've been on that kick recently. Never know. I like to shake it up. I can never stick to one project longer than 2 weeks. So I may lose focus and move to another one. You never know.
I went to Waffle House on Saturday. It's all green here in North Carolina.
Full menu.
Thank goodness.
Full menu.
I want to see the raised, you know, all the, you know, topographically, strategically placed Waffle Houses in your map.
Listen, right? that map, like literally exactly what you're describing, I posted on, I believe it was Barstool. If you're familiar with Barstool, it's the social platform for college students to be idiot college students, and adults that still want to be college students to reminisce on their idiot college days. And that got a 3D map of all the Waffle Houses in the U.S. got posted on there. I was kicking myself. Come on. Fish, you could have thought of that. That could have been me posting it, but it's all right. Barstool beat me to it.
Do people call you Fish?
Yeah, my nickname is Fish. We've never discussed that on here.
We've never discussed
that. Well, then, here we go.
Nice to meet y'all.
Okay.
While we're doing this, I want to shamelessly plug Jared Smith and his TikToks and his weather TikToks. Let me go find that.
Has he gone TikTok? What is his handle? I haven't seen this yet.
It's a standard Jared W. Smith. You know, sometimes you just have to fuse your attempt at interpreting what Gen Z is trying to do with the weather message of the day, whether it be, a plea to just not use the NAM 3 kilometer for really anything useful these days. It feels like there's lots of this, you know, and there's some weird stuff too, but this is
gotta be weird. It's on TikTok. It's gotta be weird. I mean,
it has to be weird. Yeah. And you know, Nam's like, hey, you want me? And it's like, yeah, PDS tour. Yeah. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that, bro. So it's fun. You know, it goes back to reaching people where they are. And, you know, that's a big part of weather communication just in general. That's a big part of, you know, just and of what we do. And that's hard because it just feels like you're constantly moving from one app to the next. And like, there's so many apps that are out there that I just, you know, we don't even, you know, try to do. But, you know, TikTok lends itself very well to, a little bit of humor, just keeping it light, keeping it happy. Follow me there if that's your thing. And if that's not your thing, then, you're probably more mature than I am. So
you should admit a drinking game every time I said like and subscribe.
Listen, yeah. I want to tell you, Jared, I love yours. And so I love TikTok. And so I'm TikTok, like any other app, has algorithms, and the more videos you like, the more of that content that you see. So I finally have found the weather content, and my gosh, these people in Alabama love James Spann on TikTok. You just get these little, like we got a couple weeks ago interviewing, you get these 10 second little bits of these crazy things that he talks about, and then it just shows these people in Alabama like, yeah, I know where that's at. Like, so it shows you just the communication part. And If you ever stumble upon the James Spann TikToks, they're definitely worth the look. So
I remember he opened one last week, they've had some severe weather in Alabama, and he opened it up with, "All right, we're on the talk," and it's just like, "Oh, I wish I'd come up with that." It's just legend. That's all there is to say. But there's a lot of really good weather talk out there. Brad, Chris Mulcahy, they're both on there. Mulcahy's pretty funny.
They're both on the TikTok.
They are both on the TikTok. Yes.
Yes.
They're both on the talk.
The TikTok.
Yeah.
Yeah. Panovich is on there. He said the middle school kids inspired him to do it. So
yeah. Okay,
I'm gonna have to get on TikTok, maybe wear some blue blockers or something, and just go at it, go at some forecasts, see what happens. I don't know. I mean, you can just have fun on it. That's what it's all about.
Listen, it's addicting. It can be.
We got 2 minutes left. I want to hear from Frank Strait. Are you on the TikTok, Frank?
No. That's one thing that I don't use is TikTok. I use just about everything else, I think, but not TikTok.
All right. Well, does that wrap us for this live open mic night, as we've now crossed into OT? We appreciate everyone coming to hang out.
I mean, we're live. I mean, the last thing is that, like, we've got a pretty nice weekend ahead. I think
Mother's Day looks very nice here along coastal South Carolina.
Yeah.
Maybe a small chance of a isolated shower too at night, but probably later on. So it looks like the day, like low to mid 80s and sunny, and it's just going to be a beautiful weekend, I'd say, for the most part. Yeah.
Give it for this. We could see 30s in North Carolina on Saturday morning, low temperatures in the 30s. Hey,
if you really cold mountains. And you go up to Mount Mitchell on the parkway, you might could squeeze out a snowflake sometime in 48 hours. So it's
okay.
GoPro or it didn't happen. I will tell my boss that on Friday so I can get off and go chase him.
Better shot into Grandfather Mountain, though.
Yeah. Need you to make that 10-mile hike up there and make sure for us, dodge some of those cougars up there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's my duty, my obligation. I think I will.
And the tree pollen is finally winding down.
Thank God. Yes, about time.
Listen, I think that will be my closing thought.
This rain that we got the last couple of times, I'm so over this pollen. It seems, I don't know, it seems like it was worse this year than it has in previous years. I don't know if there's any validity to that, but.
Well, I mean, if you think about what April was like, I can speak for us down in Charleston. We had one day of measurable rain in April, and that was enough measurable rain to put us, like maybe 15th driest. I mean, it was a very, very wet day. We got it all at one time. Yeah. But there was just no relief at all. It's like, and like we said, like, that's a little concerning when it comes to thinking about, hey, we're getting into May, we're getting into June. If it's going to be like this,
Yeah.
And that drought is sneaking up in a lot of places.
Yeah. It's true too. Come on, I was trying to end on a positive note.
Sorry. It's going to be a beautiful weekend.
Happy Mother's Day.
Oh, yeah.
Happy Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mother's Day is early this year.
Amazon Prime, like now. You're going to run out of time, Jared.
No, it's fine. Yeah, we got her covered. That's good.
Thanks to everybody watching and listening to this week's Carolina Weather Group. Let's roll the credits, and featuring those Patreon supporters. We'll see you back here again real soon.